In the late 1990s, Argentina spiraled into a recession, and that was not all that unlike our own. That economic crisis also spawned the Picotera movement, where left-wing activists pioneered a system of strategic roadblocks as a form of protest. Nicholas Kozloff, author of Revolution, South America, and the Rise of the New Left, joins us now to discuss what the Picoteras did and were unable to accomplish, and what lessons Occupy Wall Street might learn from that movement. I'm pleased to welcome Nicholas Kozloff back to our show for today's first Backstory segment. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
So what happened to the Argentine economy in the late 1990s?
Well, in my view, Argentina was a blueprint for what not to do. This was the go-go years of the 1990s under Carlos Menem, and Menem just privatized with a vengeance. He just privatized the state-run oil company, actually privatized the postal service, which is an echo of maybe our scaled-back service that we're seeing even in the United States today. And, you know, not surprisingly, thousands were thrown out of work, and the recession became a full-on depression by 2002.
But then Menem came in after Argentina had gone through a long dictatorship. Were some of his reforms done in response to what had happened during those years?
Well, I think Menem is a contradictory figure. On the one hand, I think I applaud his he was an activist against the military dictatorship, so that's in his favor, although he later backtracked and started pardoning some military. But just because you're liberal, maybe on that front, doesn't mean that you adopt progressive economic policies. And during the 90s, throughout the region, not just in Argentina, but in many countries, the region was just enthralled by this neoliberal economics that was being pushed by Clinton during in Washington during those years. And so the guiding philosophy was, let's just do austerity, let's do follow the dictates of whatever the IMF tells us to do. And in my view, that's exactly what you shouldn't do, because you had a really analogous situation to what we're experiencing now in the U.S. You had a vast unemployment surpassing, actually, current levels in the U.S. I mean, at the height of the recession in Argentina, you had 20% unemployment. So that's at the level of the Great Depression of the United States, in the United States during the 1930s, and probably almost 50% of Argentina's population was living in poverty. So it's a prescription of exactly what not to do. And then you had some resistance to that, these Picotero protesters. And I think what we're seeing in the United States with the Occupy movement there may be some parallels to the Argentine experience. And already, you know, Obama's taking on some of the rhetoric of the Occupy protesters, and it's an echo of Argentina, where at a certain point it just became so politically unpopular to espouse these economic policies that the Kirchners, Néstor and Cristina Kirchner, starting adopting a lot of the rhetoric of the Picotero protesters and going against austerity and actually railing against the IMF, which is reviled to this day in Argentina.
It's hard for me to grasp politics in a country like Argentina, because the Kirchners are Peronists, which I always think of as being, you know, a form of fascism. But it's more complicated than that?
Well, there's different wings of the Peronist Party. There's the Kirchners are on the center-left, and I think Néstor Kirchner, who died about a year and a half ago, will go down as a hero to many Argentines because he defied the IMF, and he proved them wrong, because the guiding logic was you don't cross the IMF. And but in the midst of he came into office in May 2003, and like I said, you know, the Picotero revolt was in full swing at that point. Many Argentines, even middle-class Argentines, sympathized with not just street protests. We're talking about roadblocks. So it was perhaps even more radicalized than what we've seen with the Occupy movement here. And I think Kirchner proved the conventional logic wrong, because he did a stimulus. He came into office. 11 million people were lifted out of poverty, and they did jobs programs, he and his wife, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner. So I think, arguably, if it weren't for the Picotero movement that was moving him to the left, he was already from the center-left wing of the party. But I think this is an example where the social movement can move political leaders in a more progressive direction. And like I said before, I think judging from Obama's speech just a couple of days ago in the Midwest, where he said that he's echoing that rhetoric of the 99%, we are the 99%. And so clearly, I think you see influence of the social movements, just like in Argentina. And so hopefully that will move Obama also, like the Kirchners, to adopt more stimulative policies towards the economy.
My guest is Nicholas Kozloff, who's talking about the Picotero movement on today's Backstory. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. What does Picotero mean? And what kinds of people joined the Picoteros?
Well, like I was saying before, in the 1990s, you had thousands of people displaced because of this wave of privatizations. And so you had virtual ghost towns creeping up in Argentina. And so virtually the only avenue of protest left to the unemployed was to actually go out and block traffic, which, to be sure, is a very frightening tactic. I'm not necessarily endorsing that as a tactic, but I think that when the rank-and-file labor unions don't really help you very much, you're unemployed. I think too many in these ghost towns in Argentina, they figured, well, we have nothing to lose.
So the Picotero movement didn't grow out of Argentina's traditional left?
No, I think it was somewhat more innovative than that. The rank-and-file labor unions would strike, but you have to be in a labor union to begin with. So for the unemployed, it really forces you to improvise. And I think the Picoteros went out and they blocked traffic, and I think that eventually caused a lot of concern for the elite, because in Argentina you have agribusiness, and you can really dislocate trade within that Mercosur block of South America, because they have to get their grain to port. And so over time, it can really have severe economic dislocation. The downside, of course, is that you might anger motorists. But, of course, the Picoteros would argue, look, my right to food and shelter is a little more important than your right to use your car.
So what happened? It's not just, it's also people trying to get their kids to school and go to work and the like. How much popular support did the movement enjoy in Argentina? We're talking about a much more aggressive movement than Occupy Wall Street.
Well, I think at its height, probably 2002, 2003, they had a lot of widespread support, even amongst middle-class Argentines. Like I was saying before, you had Great Depression levels of poverty and unemployment in Argentina. So there was middle-class support. And I think it really changed the political culture in Argentina. And the authorities, they tried clamping down in the beginning. And then two Picoteros got shot in 2001 or 2002, and they became martyrs. So at its height, I think it had pretty widespread support. And I think coming into office, Nestor Kirchner realized, well, I have to start more populist economic policies, because this movement is just too powerful for, you know, the state to control. And the police really couldn't do much. They would get to the protest and effectively not be able to do much.
Now, how similar was this to Occupy Wall Street, which claims to be leaderless, refuses to come up with a list of demands, although they do have issues that pretty much everyone agrees with. Was this more typically political? Were there people who were presenting themselves as leaders?
There were some leaders, but I think it does echo the Occupy movement. It was pretty egalitarian, so you would have roadblocks springing up all over the country, improvised soup kitchens at the site of the roadblock. And I think also, like the occupiers, they share a suspicion of authority. So they would request that the authorities negotiate with them at the roadblock itself so that it would be transparent, because they just didn't trust the authorities or leaders to go downtown to Buenos Aires and cut some deal in an office downtown when the protesters are somewhere else. So I think they share a certain suspicion of authority. And I think, they had certain concrete demands, like stipends, unemployment stipend, or greater infrastructure, a variety of different demands. But I think it also demonstrates the strength of not necessarily having specific demands, but grouping a lot of people under your banner, under the name of greater economic justice. And I think overall, there, you can argue that they had a pretty big impact, because eventually the authorities just had no other choice but to adopt more progressive economic policies.
Well, there wasn't the American alternative, was there? There was no Tea Party in Argentina at that time.
That's probably correct. I think at that point, the revulsion towards the International Monetary Fund, all of that fiscal austerity was so pronounced in Argentina. There was just a great hatred for the IMF. If the right-wingers wanted to continue with fiscal discipline, they were definitely a minority. And I think, like I was saying before, the wisdom of moving in another direction was proven over time. 11 million people were lifted out of poverty under the Kirchners. And so as a result, the Picotero movement has gone down because it's just not as much economic dislocation. But the right-wing economic philosophy was, in my view, proven wrong.
Well, how do you just tell the IMF that we're not going to listen to you? After all, the IMF represents creditors. It represents the world economy in many ways. Could Argentina just go it alone?
Well, the conventional logic was you don't cross the IMF. And Kirchner will, I think, always be remembered as defying the IMF. And I think to many on the left in Latin America, he is idolized for that. I think if it weren't for Venezuela, which helped Argentina help pay off its debt, perhaps it wouldn't have been as feasible. Kirchner did have some allies within the wider region, so that certainly helped. But I also think that the IMF ultimately wasn't as tough. Kirchner defaulted, and basically, the IMF was forced to restructure the debt under much more promising terms. And so I think it proves that the IMF is not as tough as maybe its rhetoric. And when push comes to shove, if there's widespread support in Argentina, they may actually fold.
But you couldn't apply this to a place like Greece, because they're linked in with a common currency. And if Greece defaults, it will collapse the whole European economy.
Well, I've seen some interesting pieces suggesting that perhaps Greece might go the route of Argentina, because one of the problems with Argentina was that its currency, the peso, was pegged to the dollar. So that meant that you have a lot of fiscal constraints on you on your monetary policy. Similarly, some have been suggesting that perhaps Greece could de-link from the euro, go back to the drachma, which would probably in the short term be really dislocating in some ways, but you might get more autonomy over your fiscal policy, and I think to many Greeks that would not necessarily be a disadvantageous thing.
Has Argentina rebounded? Has it suffered during this global economic downturn?
Oh, well, that's what I'm saying. I think the idea of going against the IMF has been largely borne out over time. 11 million people were lifted out of poverty by the Kirchners through employment. They fund cooperatives, employment programs, and the IMF does not have nearly as much sway in Argentina and wider South America, for that matter, at this point. So I think the IMF doesn't have much credibility in the region right now.
Now, a listener in Buenos Aires just wrote in, said, I'm a former New Yorker who now lives in Buenos Aires. The Picoteros blocking of traffic is almost a daily occurrence done by a variety of groups now. So it hasn't ended.
I think that the amount of pickets has gone down. I think at their height, it was like 2,000 in 1 year. I think the listener is right in that it entered the political culture, and I think to this day, you will have pickets, but numerically less so than at the height when you had just massive poverty and massive unemployment. And I think maybe that has lessons for the Occupy movement, because if they're going to do something tactically radical like that, you have to know when the precise moment to do that. And I think, I'm not sure whether we've gotten to that point in the U.S. where people would embrace that kind of tactic. And to be sure, it sets up a very confrontational dynamic with motorists. So I'm not necessarily saying that that would be a great tactic in the U.S., just generally speaking. But I think it can dislocate trade and force the authorities to pay attention.
Nicholas Kozloff, thank you so much for talking with us on Backstory today. I'm sure most of our listeners had never heard of the Picotero movement.
All right. Thank you very much.